Disturbing reports are emerging out of the historic Christian village of Taibe in the West Bank. Now, residents say settlers attacked their community while Israeli forces were present in the area. What really happened? And why are some prominent Christian voices acknowledging it while others say the reports are exaggerated or false? I'm Scottie-Dale Hughes, and this is America First. Reports coming from the Palestinian Christian village of Taibe in the West Bank. Now, residents say Israeli settlers entered their community, blocked streets, stole livestock, and created widespread fear while Israeli forces were present in the area during the confrontation. The details of exactly what happened are still emerging and remain disputed. But for some, many Christians are watching around the world. The incident has raised urgent questions about the safety of ancient Christian communities that have lived in that region for centuries. Now, Taibe is one of the last remaining majority Christian Palestinian villages in the Holy Land. Its churches and traditions trace back generations, making it a deeply significant place, not only historically, but spiritually. But this story has also sparked debate. Some journalists and commentators have highlighted these reports as evidence of growing dangers for Christian communities that are in the region, while others have dismissed the claims as misleading or even exaggerated. So how do we actually separate the facts from the narratives from falsehoods? And more importantly, how do we ensure that vulnerable communities are protected regardless of politics and faith? So joining us is Jason Jones, founder of the Vulnerable People Project, an organization that delivers humanitarian aid to communities facing persecution and violence while advocating for human dignity worldwide. Jason, thank you for joining us once again. You've worked in various regions around the world. I want you to help our viewers understand why Taibe, and we've gone back and forth on what the actual, how you pronounce the word, how that village actually matters. And for those unfamiliar with this village, why is this Christian community historically and spiritually significant?
Scotty, well, thank you very much. And thank you for sharing your platform with the Christians in Taibe and the West Bank. That truly, Palestinian Christians are the most vulnerable Christian community in the world. And they're also the most calumniated Christian community in the world. And I'm ashamed to say that probably most of my public life, I've been part of the problem. You know, our organization, the Vulnerable People Project, serves vulnerable ethnic and religious communities around the world. We have armed guards right now in front of churches, synagogues, and mosques that are exposed to political enthusiasms and violence. On October 7th, the very first thing we did was put guards outside of vulnerable synagogues in Africa. But when I was asked to begin evacuating pregnant women and wounded Christian women and children from Gaza in the early days of the war, I began to see that my understanding of the issue had really been colored by propaganda, and propaganda that came to me more through my religious community than it did through the media or through the political community. These poor Christian communities are extremely vulnerable, and Taibe especially. This past Christmas, I was in the West Bank. I had the privilege of spending Christmas at the Church of the Nativity in Bethlehem with Cardinal Pizzaballa, and in fact, Governor Huckabee was sitting in the row in front of me, Ambassador Huckabee, and it was quite a privilege. I've gone to the vulnerable Christian communities like in Bet-Zohar and Bethlehem, but when you go to Taibe, it is a different feeling. It is frightening and it is lonely. It is a small Christian community that is being encircled by very aggressive Jewish settlers. They're violent, they're cruel. They have no respect for the property and life of these Christians. And to me, the great tragedy is there are many wonderful Jewish and Israeli human rights groups that are speaking out on the rise in settler violence. But sadly, so many Christians seemed to be willing to turn a blind eye. In fact, Ambassador Huckabee knows very well what's going on. He knows very well that these are peaceful communities. But he has been cowardly and not having, I guess, the will or strength to speak up in their defense.
Jason, I've got to ask you, Ambassador Huckabee, well-known Southern Baptist preacher in his former life before he entered into politics, but I believe you still keep that collar on you for your entire livelihood. Why would he be ignoring people of his own faith in a region, especially considering he is representing the United States, which is overwhelmingly a Christian country? And why is he not defending some of his own faith in a country that he has so much power in?
You know, when Ambassador Huckabee was named ambassador, I was in the West Bank at the time, and the Christian community there was horrified that he was going to be the ambassador because of his well-known commitment to Zionism. But I had shared with the Christians there, I know Ambassador Huckabee, as do you. I said, I believe he's a very godly man. He's a kind and sincere man. And I think he's just been spoon-fed propaganda. But as ambassador, when he has access to reports, and he's not just going on sort of these Potemkin village tours sponsored by the State of Israel, his eyes will open and he will speak courageously. I think what we're seeing with people like Ambassador Huckabee, as the truth has become undeniable, they have to make a decision. And I think that the decision is either you speak truth in the face of power and face severe consequences, very severe consequences, or you roll over. And you can see in the bitterness, and I see a change in Huckabee's demeanor, in his character, in his personality. And I think it's quite a tragedy. I think he was not man enough to rise to the occasion and speak truth. Ecclesiastes 4:1 says, King Solomon said, I looked all over the world and all I see is oppression. And on the side of the oppressor is power. And on the side of the oppressed, there is no one. And that was true when King Solomon said that. But now we have the body of Christ. The church is in the world. And we as Christians should stand with the vulnerable Israeli, the vulnerable Palestinian, the vulnerable Yazidi or the Uyghur. That is the vocation of the Christian in the world. It is to stand with the outcast, with the leper, to kneel down next to the woman caught in the act of adultery, to literally kiss lepers. We are to stand with those the world lacks the courage to stand with. And tragically, Ambassador Huckabee proved King Solomon correct, that power is on the side of the oppressor. Mike Huckabee is. I'm sorry.
No, well, and that's the thing. And Mike Huckabee is serving with the oppressor. I have to ask you about this community. Are we considering the Christians that are in this region? Are we finding them to be more Protestant, or are they being more of the Catholic faith and traditions, or even the Orthodox? Or what is their makeup of?
Well, surprisingly, I'm a Catholic, and so I was surprised to find large evangelical and even mainland Protestant communities across the Holy Land. The oldest extant church in the world is in Gaza, and that is St. Porphyrius Church, which is an Orthodox church. But the apostolic Christian communities, the Catholics, the Orthodox, they have churches that have been there since the time of the apostles. But then with colonialism, it is surprising to find many evangelical Christians across the West Bank. And for them, this is most especially scandalous, because it is really their own community in the English-speaking world, in the United States especially, that is thoughtless to their well-being and openly and advocating for their destruction. You have settlers coming from Ukraine and from Russia and from the United States, and they're now just, they've approved destroying 11,000 Christian homes in the West Bank.
Who approved
these
that?
Homes,
this, Hold on, who approved this? Who's approving this?
Oh, the State of Israel. You have fanatics like Smotrich and Benjamin Netanyahu. And even today as we speak, Israel's taken advantage of the war, and caravans are pouring in to Beth Zohor, to Bethlehem. There is a new settlement that's been approved in Shtema. We launched SaveWestBankChristians.com just weeks ago to stop the new settlement in Shtema. This settlement will be the end of the Christian community in the Holy Land. It will be the end of the oldest Christian community in the world. The Christians in Bethlehem, in Beth Zohor, these are the descendants of those who walked with the apostles. Their families were in the upper room. They descend from the Jews that accepted Jesus, and they have been there long since the first century. We have evangelical pastors publicly not only denying their right to political autonomy, but that their very existence. Well, but they've been there.
So. That they've been there. So, Jason, you know, when you talk to your humanitarian networks on this and contacts in the region, what are those in Taiba saying about what is happening during these confrontations with the settlers? And what are the local authorities doing to de-escalate the situations, if anything?
You know, Palestinian Christians are really a very charming community. We're Anglo-American Christians, whether we're Protestant or Catholic. We have a very muscular Christianity, a Christianity that has been tied to empire and power for centuries and centuries. The Christian communities in the Holy Land, they're very thoughtful, they're very prayerful, but they also are heartbroken that Christians in the West are silent or oblivious or thoughtless to their suffering and to their oppression. But I would say to everyone watching, if you have an opportunity to go to the West Bank, and not on one of these Potemkin village tours where they take you there to make you afraid of the locals. I go to the West Bank all the time. It's one of my favorite places in the world, probably my favorite place in the world. There's no place on earth that I've been more welcomed or felt more at home, not just in the Christian Cross, the Palestinian community. There, again, I wrote an article 2 years ago called Help, I'm an Anti-Palestinian Bigot. Right. Because as I was evacuating wounded women and children from Gaza into Egypt, my eyes were open to this community is not who I was told they were. I was there to rescue women and children, but I had a lot of prejudices and preconceived ideas on who the Palestinians were. And it wasn't until being face to face with them and seeing that they're not addled with anti-Semitism. Are there extremist organizations in Gaza? Of course there are.
But what is happening, Jason? I want to get specifics. What are happening? Are we talking violence? Are they coming after? Are these settlers taking what they consider to be justice in their own hands and eradicating themselves? Or are they doing it more just through they won't let them work, they won't let them shop? How is that aggression being shown by the Israeli settlers towards this community?
Well, two Palestinian men, two brothers, were murdered yesterday by settlers while the IDF stood by. An American Palestinian from Pennsylvania, a young man, was recently murdered. So yeah, they kill Palestinians, they beat them. I have a friend, Alice Casilla. She's a wonderful young Christian woman. They've destroyed her home twice. They've destroyed her businesses and they've beaten her up. And then they've prosecuted her for standing up for herself. So there is direct physical violence. There is separating the communities, which they're trying to do now with the new settlement in Ishtema, which will make it impossible for Palestinians in one part of the West Bank to go to church or school or work in the other part of the West Bank. This is quite sorrowful. And you know, Scotty, I work in Nigeria and Sudan and Afghanistan, and I have been celebrated by the conservative movement. I've been celebrated across the Christian community for my work in serving vulnerable ethnic and religious minorities. But I get attacked for daring to advocate for the Palestinian Christians. And I say this, that if I am not willing to advocate for Christians in Bethlehem, mm-hmm. I should never open my mouth for a vulnerable community ever again,
right?
Because I'm a fraud.
Well, Jason Jones, you are a flag, but I want you to stay right there because we need to take a quick break and you've got more to say. Because after this break, we're actually gonna ask Jason about the future of Christian communities in the Holy Land and what prominent American figures are saying about this entire situation, or more importantly, not saying. Stay with us. Welcome back. We're discussing the troubling reports coming out of the historic Christian villages of Taibei, all in the West Bank, and the broader question of how vulnerable Christian communities are being protected in conflict zones around the world. So joining us is Jason Jones, whose organization works directly with persecuted and at-risk populations of all faith. Now, Jason, when we went to break, we were talking about the debate over what exactly is happening on the ground and why some prominent voices acknowledge these concerns, while others say the claims are exaggerated, or ones in powerful positions, like you pointed out, Ambassador Huckabee, are just ignoring it. Jason Jones, welcome back to this conversation. You know, this issue, I do believe, Jason, has sparked some debate among prominent Christian voices. We talked about Mike Huckabee not publicly acknowledging the incidents like this and actually pushed back against this narrative that Christian communities are under threat. How do you respond to that perspective here in America, especially when we talk about all the various different religions and persecutions that these churches are going and doing their mission trips to and rescuing?
Yeah, you know, it's very challenging because, first of all, and it's probably surprising to a lot of folks, many American Christians don't even understand that there are Christian communities across the Middle East in Syria. Huckabee was embarrassed, you know, on this, in his interview with Tucker Carlson. He seemed oblivious to how many Christians were in Lebanon, Jordan, Syria, Iraq. So there are ancient Christian communities across the Middle East. The Apostle Thomas really got around. I mean, he spread churches from what we now know as Israel into what we now know as Syria, Iraq, Iran, and all the way into India. So there are first century Christian communities across the Middle East, all the way into India, that were founded by the apostles themselves. But so many Christians don't understand that there are these ancient Christian communities. And then sadly, like the editor-in-chief at the Babylon Bee, he said, well, they're not really Christians because they're Arabs or they're Catholics or Orthodox, and Catholics and Orthodox aren't really Christians, so therefore we shouldn't care about them. And it's strange to see an evangelical Christian whose ecclesial community descends from these ancient Christian communities, and these ancient Christian communities sent missionaries to Europe that ended up converting our ancestors, yet we're denying that they, in fact, themselves are Christians. So you see a lot of either they don't know they're there, or they deny they're Christians because they're a part of these ancient Orthodox or Catholic communities. But what we are seeing, and there has been a sea change. And if 2 years ago, my work was very hard in the West Bank, in Gaza, but today it's become much easier because I believe the Christian community is waking up, and in younger evangelicals especially, the vast majority of young evangelicals are waking up. And sadly, many of them are losing their faith because they've been scandalized by the brutal ethno-nationalist racist rhetoric that they hear coming from their pastors, or they're converting to Catholicism or Orthodoxy. And I think it's fair to say that the dispensational form of evangelical Christianity died in Gaza, and it will die with the last boomer Zionist that watches John Hagee on television, because young people have been scandalized by this violence. I just recently heard Dr. Ron Paul say it's something that's good that's coming from all this tragedy is that young people are waking up to the horror of war. And I've worked in too many war zones in the past 30 years, and I can say that I don't even watch war movies or TV shows with violence because I'm just so worn down by all the violence I have to experience and through our work. And young people are just being bombarded with these images of war on their phones.
Right.
And they're being bombarded with really vile, dehumanizing rhetoric. And so if anything good from coming out of this is maybe this Gen Z is being humanized.
I appreciate you looking for the optimism, and I agree with you, Jason. And we both have kids that are teenagers. We know that they are paying attention, and they're getting their information not from their traditional sources. They're looking to the alternatives because they don't trust what's being fed to them by those mainstream sources. But to that point, though, do you think this issue of protecting Christians in the Middle East is getting caught up in this broader political debate about Israel and the Palestinian conflict, and the Christians are just being pushed into the same category as the Palestinians, and it's basically a us versus them situation being set up?
Yeah, it is an us versus them situation, and I thank God every day that I'm a Christian to know that really there is no them and there is only an us. And so my work at the Vulnerable People Project over the past over two decades, we've knit our lives together in service of the Yazidis that are the pre-Abrahamic people, the proto-Semitic people of the Middle East. We've worked with the Muslim Uyghurs, 3 million of them in concentration camps in China. And we work with the broader Palestinian community. One of the most beautiful projects we had last year is we threw Children's Day events at all of the camps for the orphans across the West Bank, where we brought in swimming pools and food, and we made ices, and we brought in clowns, and we had singing, and we had dancing. And I didn't look to, you know, we don't look to see if they're baptized or circumcised. We want to share the love of God with the world. We were created to do just two simple things: love each other and love our Creator. And that's what we want to do. The world is filled with sheep and lost sheep. And so I'm grateful that I don't see an other. So one of my great concerns is actually the rise of Jew hatred and anti-Semitism because of what the state of Israel is doing. And so it is a concern when you point out when you point out the crimes of the state of Israel, it can be used to harness Jew hatred and anti-Semitism in the same way that when an Islamist extremist organization or a Hindu extremist organization, 300 churches were destroyed last year in one state alone in India by Hindu extremists. But we don't want to foment hatred towards Hindus or Muslims or Jews. What we want to do is, you know, knit together a culture of life and a civilization of love that shelters our children and grandchildren, that they get to live beautiful lives, free from fear and violence, and that is our goal. And so it is a tightrope that we're walking right now because the stakes are so high and the violence has been so brutal.
Well, and I have to ask you, since this is a show, America First, what role do you feel like is the U.S. government paying any attention to this? Are you having conversations with those in some of those prominent positions and they're just going, my hands are tied right now due to this other conflict that's happening? Are you getting anywhere with the Trump administration?
You know, we have really good ties into the Trump administration. I get attaboys and thank yous and asked often for white papers or reports. But it doesn't seem to have any real impact. I can't believe that Ambassador Huckabee hasn't been withdrawn. I mean, this man said for the world to hear that Israel, if it wants to, can take Saudi Arabia, Syria, Jordan, Lebanon, Iraq, and most of Egypt. I mean, this was startling for someone that represents the United States government to say shamelessly in front of the world, yet he wasn't recalled. Right now, you know, less than 30% of Americans support this conflict in Iran, and it's just beginning to unfold. What is it going to look like in the coming weeks as this war, it looks like Iran isn't willing or ready to slow things down anytime soon. So I do, you know, there's a battle within the Trump administration. I believe you have J.D. Vance and Tulsi Gabbard on one side, and then you have the ambitious grifters like Marco Rubio and Lindsey Graham on the other side. One side is America First, and one side puts self-interest and the interests of their clique, their powerful clique, first. But, you know, one of the reasons I founded the Vulnerable People Project in 2002 in the lead up to the invasion of Iraq, an invasion I opposed, is I wanted to harness the conservative movement to serve, and the pro-life movement, to serve the vulnerable communities in Iraq. And in case there was a war, I was really fearful for what would happen to those minority communities. And what we saw, what did end up eventually happening, is a brutal ethnic cleansing of the Christians and Yazidis across Iraq. With the rise of ISIS after we shattered the secular equilibrium left and left a void. I want a unipolar world. I want to maintain the Anglo-American world order. I don't want competition. I don't want China or Russia or India to be our peers. But for that to be the case, there needs to be a rules-based order in which we are the guardians of. But I think the world has lost faith in the United States to be a guardian of a rules-based order. And it has been our subordinating our interests to Israel's interests that are undermining our relationships with the world. And this is quite a tragedy. And what could this mean? It can mean that our children, my son, I opposed the invasion of Iraq. My oldest son fought ISIS in Iraq and Syria. I have three more boys that are approaching military age. So, you know, if we want our sons and grandsons and our daughters and granddaughters to fight in useless, counterproductive regime change wars, if that's our hope, if we want to be impoverished, if we want to see the rise of political extremism on the left and the right, we're right on target for that.
Well,
but if we want to leave our children a free, just, and peaceful country, I think we're headed in exactly the wrong direction.
Jason, I want to thank you for sharing your thoughts today and thank your son for his service to our country because it never ends. I really appreciate the work that you're doing to save these vulnerable communities around the world, especially in the West Bank. We will continue to shed light on the issue.
Thank you, Scotty.
For thousands of years, Christian communities have lived in the very place where the history of their faith began. Now, villages like Taibe represent living connections to that history, communities that have endured through centuries of political change, conflict, and cultural transformation. The reports coming out of this village are still being debated and examined. But what should not be debated is the principle that every community, regardless of religion, nationality, or politics, deserves safety, dignity, and protection. As our conversation makes clear, the question is not only what happened in one village on one day. The deeper question is whether the world is actually paying attention when vulnerable communities raise their voice and have the courage to do so. History has shown that when these voices are ignored, entire cultures and communities can disappear. We don't need that to happen in our watch. Thank you for joining. This has been America First. I'm Skynell Hughes, and we'll continue to follow this story as it develops.